Thank you, Henry, and thank you for that very enlightening presentation on seat scale. I think you did a much better job than I could have ever done. Okay, I'd like to present how future generations applied seat scale in Peru in one of our projects in community maternal child health. This was actually our second project. Our initial work with seat scale in Peru was prior to 2005. This project was from 2005 to 2009. Prior to 2005, we did a pilot project in another part of the country in Peru to actually see how we could do seat scale, sort of building up a model from the community. Applying all the different criteria, the steps, and the principles of seed scale with the community, with the health facility, and trying to see what worked, what didn't work, kind of going back and forth. And so this really became our model. And then the opportunity came to apply for a USAID grant with a Child Survival Project, which USPBOs are apt to apply for, and we thought, well, we will propose to do a seed scale type of model to USAID, and we're sure that they've never done anything like this. We're sure they've never seen this before, even though they may have heard about seed scale, and we really didn't expect to get it at all because it was completely, you know, outside of their framework that they generally worked with. But to our surprise, they actually did fund us. No relationships to disclose. And so we were able to apply this program in Cusco, in rural Cusco, in a population of about 120,000 population. And the idea was to link communities, the Ministry of Health, and local district government in a model that would be both equitable, would be sustainable, and that would apply all of the criteria and the principles of seed scale. So we are also trying to link seed scale class, which is a model that's very particular to Peru of legalized community involvement in primary health care, where communities have elected representatives and they actually administer funds for primary health care in agreement with the government, and maternal child health and child survival. So the project location, if you all know where Peru is on the coast, and then up in the mountains in Cusco where Machu Picchu is, some of you may have been to Machu Picchu, but in fact, aside from the multi-million dollar tourist industry generated by Machu Picchu, Cusco is has the highest rates of maternal and perinatal mortality. So we are working in 258 rural communities and rural districts, applying this in 28 primary healthcare facilities. So as you saw from the previous presentation, there are four basic principles. Start from success, which is what we always did at the beginning of the project going in, and whoever we were working with, the first thing we did was we all sat down in a big meeting and said, okay, what have you all done that's good? What are your successes? And so we would make these big lists of successes. And it really makes everybody happy to do that. They all come out, and the word energy is true. They all come out energized. And wow, we did a lot of really good things. They don't even know what the new project is. It doesn't really matter. You know, all they know is that everybody has had the chance to say what they did that was good, and it really does energize everybody. This three-way partnership that I'll describe, evidence-based decision-making, always looking at the evidence out of every local partner, that they produce their own evidence, and then the plans, the work plans that create the behavior change. So principle two, with a three-way partnership, is very critical to the model, where the change agent, in this case is Future Generations, could be a university, could be any NGO, could also be USAID, could be World Bank. But not working alone with communities, because frequently you have this two-way partnership, but making sure that the government is always involved there and making sure that they're always drawn in to making the decisions and to kind of resetting the hard disk of what is their role as government, and resetting the hard disk, what is the role of communities. In this project, we had to really convince the communities going in there that we weren't going to give them a whole lot of things. Because they come in, the first thing they say is, well, what are you going to give us? Because that's what they all get from any agency coming in. You know, the community agencies will say, we're going to give you this and this and that. And that's the first thing they wanted to know. We said, no, we're not going to give you anything. We're going to help you get things from the government. So that will be sustainable. And so with this partnership with the outside change agents, both working with the government to change their approach and with the communities to change their approach, you get forward momentum. So the five criteria of seed scale, how did we apply equity? We started in the very farthest communities with this implementation of the project. Sounds crazy, I know. We're used to the low-hanging fruit. We're used to starting with the easy and then moving to the harder. In fact, working in the farthest areas, you really do get more people that are looking at you and saying, wow, you're really working out in Livitaka, you know, just 6 hours away. Why are you working out there? And you're not working here 1 hour away from Cusco. Okay, well, and it's more expensive, true, but in the end, you get more benefits for the community and for the program as a whole. So sustainability, always asking any proposal or any request, you have to ask always, is this going to be sustainable for the community or not? Okay, just always asking yourself, that's how you apply the criteria. You just always have to be thinking, these criteria, am I applying this criteria or not in this project? And your decision making becomes much simpler when you have something to base your criteria on. And it's easier to say no, because it's not more equitable, it's not more sustainable. So what I'd like to focus on is the seven steps of seed scale, because that's really how the seed scale is applied. As you can see, the principles are incorporated within the seven steps of seed scale. And just to go through them again, the form the coordinating committee, review the past successes. Each one of these we're going to go through and see how we applied these. Okay, so the first step is create and recreate annually a local coordinating committee. Now, I also want to point out that each one of these steps we applied at two different levels, because it's not just one level. We applied all of these both at the health facility level and in the community. Okay, there's two different levels of applying seed scale methodology. Probably there's more levels. Okay, you could probably say, how did you apply all of these in the regional health office? And how did you apply all of the seed scale steps in the regional government? You could also do that too. Okay, but just looking at these two levels, establishing a local coordinating committee. So in a health facility, and probably Peru is not different from many other countries, there's a vertical organizational structure with the doctors in charge, and then below him is the nurse and the midwives and everybody else, and they all follow the doctor's orders, and life goes on as normal. So very vertical, and if the doctor doesn't want to do it, then it doesn't get done. So first of all, in order to establish this coordinating committee, we promoted forming a management team. So we would make a more horizontal decision-making process. And of course, the nurses and the midwives were very happy with this arrangement because they got more of a voice in what was going on there. We also strengthened the local health administration committees or the class where they existed. And so this would be actually a true coordinating committee created out of community members with the participation of the health facility members in shared coordination, shared management of the health facility, actually managing the funds together. And in the community, Andean communities are generally organized and they have their own community structure. Traditionally, not every country is like this, but in Peru there is. So actually there wasn't a need to establish a new coordinated committee because each community already had their own leadership structure that was autonomous to the community. And so we worked with them. We could have gone in and said, well, general development theory in public health says that we should organize immediately a community development committee or a health committee in the community and go in and say, okay, who wants to be on this committee? But that would be then parallel to the structure that's already there. You don't want to create parallel structures. So we just worked with who was there, and they were the ones that made all the decisions in the community, as far as we were concerned. They were the ones that had to pick the health promoter. They were the ones that had to create their own health committee. Okay, step two, identify previous successes. Here we are, making lists of successes, which is, the picture's not far from the reality. So in the health facilities, just a list of possible, of many of the successes that health facilities, were already experiencing. So, even the health personnel needed to get energized and realize that, yes, they were able to do some things previously and that they could do other new things, even though maybe it wasn't exactly the Ministry of Health protocol to do that. And then the community, of course, listing the success is a very important aspect of working with communities because frequently, what we found going into many communities was there's a lot of depression, there was a lot of apathy, there's a lot of, they didn't know how they could move forward without somebody coming in and giving them a lot of things. So this really helps a lot. Step three, study successes in other places. Everyone's piling into a car and going someplace. And in our project, since we had a previous pilot project in another part of the country, we had budgeted in the project to send 50 people from the new project site all the way across country, with an hour airline flight plus a 9-hour bus ride over to our other project site, so that they could see exactly what was being done in the other place. What we wanted to do with them, how was it already being implemented someplace else? And this was incredibly successful because they all came back and said, yeah, hey, we could do that. We're not doing that now, but we could do that. We could do that even better than they can. And so it turned out that these people in this group of 50 people that went over there, including people from the regional health office, from health facility staff, from regional government, even we sent health promoters, we sent community leaders, just a whole group, multidisciplinary, if you may, group over, and they all took this trip together and bonded on the way over. This was very successful. So community leaders had also participated in this. And then later on the project, you start developing your own sites within the area, and then there's a cross-fertilization, sending people back and forth to the sites, even within the project area, that are being developed as you go along. And this is part of the scaling up process of seed scale. You develop some seed centers, and they call them scale squared centers, used for training, and then use those training sites for horizontal training to other people in the area. And then step four is self-evaluation with key indicators and establish priorities. So how did we apply this? In the health facilities, we had a battery of five self-evaluation instruments that we asked each health facility to apply with their little management team that they had organized. One of the first steps, their first activities, was to apply this set of self-evaluation instruments, which were related to how are they organized and managed in the health facility to work in communities You know, what is their quality? What is the satisfaction of their users? What is the satisfaction of the staff? And also looking at a coverage self-evaluation, using their own data to look at how well are they covering the communities in their jurisdiction. And for the first time, they realized that most of the people that they're attending are actually coming from a very small area around the health facility, and very few are coming from the communities, and this is the first time they realize this. And so they start thinking, wow, how can we change that? And then they start moving to the next step of developing their own quality improvement plans. Of course, this is not a new idea. You know, there's all these quality improvement projects that use very similar strategies. But this is using very, very simple tools and very simple processes for people to have self-realization and then move to the next step of making their plans. So also in the communities, the health promoters apply their local census and a three-question survey, very, very simple survey that in the end the health personnel had to help with in cases where the health promoters could not write. It was a way, what were the three questions? The health promoters had to go to their health facility, to each home that they were responsible for and say, what are your problems? What are the health problems in this home? And the mother would answer. What would you like to learn about health? And what changes would you like to see in the community? So with those three simple questions, the health promoters and the health personnel were able to get a much better handle on, you know, what is going on in the homes and what are their needs, and then address those needs rather than coming in with a health promoter curriculum and say, well, okay, the outside NGO comes in and says, okay, we're going to train the health promoters in A, B, and C. And in this process, we find out first, what do the mothers want to know? And as Carl Taylor would say, you have to scratch where it itches first. And so that was the idea behind that, and it actually was very effective. And then developing a local work plan being the next step, which is also one of the principles. In the health facilities, people, with their management committees, started to analyze the situation, learned to make decisions as a team, and they began to work with the community leaders, not just with the health promoters. And also in the communities, they started making decisions also based on things that they were learning from looking at their own situation in a different way. So step six would be take action on at least one priority. So their plans would be, for example, in health facilities, they would create a new process for working with communities that was actually part of the Ministry of Health strategy, but was not well defined or well implemented, so we helped them implement that. Also looking at different aspects of MCH services. And also in the community, each community would develop its own work plan, and they were completely different. Each community had a completely different work plan. But that was okay. The idea is just that they do make one plan and carry out one activity, because it's an iterative process, right? It doesn't even have to be health. It could be anything, because eventually, over the next 4 years, they're going to get around to doing health. And in fact, most of them did. And then evaluate and make mid-course corrections. So the health facility staff would start to meet monthly to analyze their progress. And the communities would also be starting to work with the communities, with the health facility staff. So some of the strengths of working with this way is that using this paradigm, which is easily explained, it has limited numbers of points. It has five criteria, it has four steps, and seven steps and four principles. It's appealing to people to learn that, and it brings clarity also to the resetting of relationships between the community and the government, and also a new relationship with the outside in change agents. And it's also building on existing resources, principally trying to get government to rethink how it's giving funds to communities and what is their role in providing sustainability to community programs, and you know, being more open to accepting new ways of thinking and new ways of working with communities because of the change agent that has come in that will not always be there either, but a new way of working. And I think that okay, weaknesses. Okay, slower startup. It does take a long time to do a lot of the baseline work, do some of the surveys, get people to do the self-evaluation, explain to people what is seed scale. Also, you have less control over activities because we're allowing communities to make their own decisions and the health facilities to make their own decisions. And then they're not always the decisions that are in the work plan that we submitted to the funding agency. Necessarily, right? So you do have less control over activities, and it's a little bit disconcerting to the funding agency and even to the NGO if you're not used to that. But in the long term, the net result would be that less short-term gain, more long-term impact, okay? And we have in the back of the room, there's some folders, some brochures on our project with the results, and you can see that we actually, at the end of 4 years, we did have significant results in reducing chronic child malnutrition, reducing, and all of the behaviors that lead to that, which would be reducing diarrheal disease prevalence, increasing breastfeeding practices, increasing water management practices, et cetera. So I will leave that with you. And thank you very much. And the next presentation we're going to have is Henry Taylor back again talking about China and scaling up with seed scale in China.